Florida Basketball, our podcast, is brought to you by the Gatorverse, an exclusive community dedicated to connecting University of Florida fans and student-athletes. Members receive access to exclusive autographed collectibles, real-life experiences, giveaways, VIP events, rewards, and athletes receive a majority of revenue from sales of their collectibles. That's the way that NIL is supposed to work. To find out more about becoming a Gatorverse member and Lockermania, visit Gatorverse.io. That's Gatorverse.io.
Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. I am Neil Blackman, Saturday Down South. On this episode, I will be joined by my man Jacob Brudner, 24/7 Sports. He's going to help us break down Florida's victory last night at Rupp Arena. Obviously, the Gators needed that one, man. You talk about a game that you needed to win, and then you go out and get it in just spectacular fashion. I mean, when you talk about poise, you talk about just resiliency, hitting big shots, tremendous individual performances. You know, Florida had all of that in this game, and that's why they come away with the 94-91 win, the first quad one win of the season for Florida. They had been 14-0 against quads two and three and four. I know I spoke to our guy Rob Duster about it, and at Field of 68, and, you know, just talking about what a fascinating resume Florida had, because this isn't a team that loses to anyone that's not really good, but everyone they play that's really good, they hadn't beaten. Well, Kentucky's really good, and Florida came out, got the dub. So I just thought, you know, obviously for the Gators, confidence-wise has to be huge. Momentum-wise, they keep the winning streak going. Now they head to Texas A&M, which, you know, tough place to play or no. Certainly a game that Florida will feel is a winnable game on the road against an Aggies team that has been up and down. You know, it's not like that's not a beatable team. They're not a team that's ranked as high as Florida and KenPom. They are a team that has maybe the SEC's best player in Wade Taylor the fourth. So we will get into the A&M game as well. But we'll welcome Jacob Brudner on here momentarily and get into Florida's victory over Kentucky. You know, what I would say, the biggest kind of no doubters about this game, obviously a game that is decided kind of the opposite from the original game in Gainesville on January 6th, the final plays in regulation, is the one that people remember in the Walter Clayton shot, which comes off a Zion Pullen attack, and then a really good job by Walter Clayton, who slid up the floor so that Pullen could make the pass to begin with, because without sliding over first, Reed Shepard would have been in the passing lane and the pass wouldn't be there. And then obviously the Clayton pump fake and the bucket, but it was stuff before that play that I thought, you know, was just tremendous, from the Riley Kugel pass to Tyrese Samuel, and then that big bucket, to the way that Florida, you know, is able then to negate the 4-point deficit in the final 20 seconds. Obviously they get the rebound off the Dillingham miss, which Kentucky contested. So just the little things. And then the beginning of halves, right? Also, well, the way that Florida closed the first half too, you know, they're down 10 points with a minute to go. They end up down five in the locker room at halftime. And they did that with, you know, picking kind of optimal times to make their stops, if we're being honest. And then, just a tremendous heady play by Thomas Hawk to get a run out layup for Will Richard, who made it through contact, probably could have gotten a call. I didn't think that the refs were really rep worthy last night, to be quite honest. I thought pretty well officiated game. There's been other uglier ones up at Rupp. But, you know, if you look at the way Florida closed two halves and then you look at the way that Florida opened the second half, it's almost the exact opposite of what happened in Gainesville. So those kind of moments are the moments that define games like this, in addition to the fact that, you know, sometimes you make a huge shot as we welcome in Jacob Brunner, who I'm sure has thoughts on the spectacular Walter Clayton Jr. Dude, the guy went 2 of 6 in the first half and had 2 turnovers and just seemed kind of disengaged a little bit. What a turnaround.
Yeah, no, what a turnaround. I think that Florida was able to dial things up for him the way that I think it wanted to all along. I mean, this is a guy who is a very talented three-point shooter. We knew that. I actually believe you and I, Neil, had a conversation on the podcast right before the season started about Walter Clayton's shooting prowess and his ability to change games from beyond the arc. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, he made the 2 most clutch threes of the night. A lot of credit, I think, goes to Florida's other guard play to enable some of that. But at the end of the day, this is a skilled shot maker, and Florida knew what it was getting before the season. And we've seen on several occasions so far, in my opinion, that has kind of materialized. But no better example last night, 7 for 13 from beyond the arc and hit the game winner, you know, or, well, really the game saver at the end of regulation. And then another 3-pointer with about 1:40 left in overtime. And that to me was, that was it. When he hit that, it was 87-86 and Florida went up 89-86 and they never trailed again. So a clutch night, no doubt.
Yeah, then, you know, Florida, I mean, this is a team with marvelous guards, and you could argue, and I don't know if this is correct, but I think you could certainly make the argument that outside of Mark Sears and Dalton Connect, Mark Sears at Alabama and Dalton Connect at Tennessee, there might not be a player playing better in the SEC right now than Zion Pullen. And again, last night, I mean, obviously the pass to Clayton, which, you know, is just a heady play, and to get it through the passing lane with Reed Shepard kind of sitting in the passing lane in the gap waiting, I thought was spectacular. But then he has the drive in overtime where he has the left-handed finish, finishes with 27-7. This is after, what was he, 28-8 against Georgia or something like that? I mean, he is just – he's playing at a different level. You know, and I knew he was good, but, man, this is something I haven't seen much of.
Yeah, I will say this. You know, before the season had started, I had a couple conversations with people who were familiar with preseason developments around Florida basketball, and I basically asked them, you know, who are some of the guys who stand out to you that maybe aren't getting appreciated as much as they should in the lead up to the season? And the answer was Zion Pullen. And I was a little surprised to hear that, because initially my thought was, well, here's this really high profile transfer. Florida had to battle against some really top tier schools in order to be able to get him into the fold. And, you know, these guys are basically saying, look out, this is somebody who's going to have, you know, a first team all SEC caliber season. And I would say that we've seen that so far. He became the first Gator since 1998 last night to post back-to-back 25-5 games. I mean, he's been a phenomenal passer and distributor. Just pulling up his KenPom right here, and he ranks 179th out of over 2,000 qualified Division I players in assist rate. Doesn't turn the ball over a whole bunch, just 9.1%, and is an incredibly efficient offensive player. Personally, would I like to see him shoot the ball a little bit more? Yes, and that's only because I think he's a fantastic shooter of the ball, and some of that gets lost in his, you know, ability to distribute and create. But another win in the transfer portal, no doubt. And I think that, you know, Pullen is a guy who is really the glue of this team. I think that he allows Florida to do what it does, and when the Gators are playing at their best and they're at their most dangerous, it is in large part because of his presence.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, Todd has talked a lot about just the way that Florida, when they started valuing the basketball more, things got better on the offensive end. And I wanted to ask you about that, and just sort of what all is going right offensively. Is as Florida's now 13th in offensive efficiency on KenPom. The Bart Torvik number is super fascinating to me as well, because they have that like last 10 games offensive efficiency, and Florida has now moved into the top 10 nationally in that category. And really it's a combo of Zion Pullen's, you know, ability to sort of value the basketball. And then Clayton and Riley Kugel to some extent, although a little less and probably a little more slowly than Florida fans want, making better decisions on their own. But Pullen seems to be kind of the straw that's stirring the drink. And then, you know, I still think, like Todd keeps saying, man, I think this offense can play better. I think this offense can play better. And, you know, we saw it last night at Rupp, why he had been insisting that that was the case.
Yeah, and I think also we have seen some games so far this season. The one that really stands out to me, and perhaps this is a recency thing, but is the Georgia game. We saw Florida play a really good offensive game, sans its turnover numbers. It turned the ball over 19 times against Georgia, and I would argue that that's where things really fell apart, and that's been the case in several other games this year too. You know, Florida doesn't adequately value the basketball in some games. It gets a little bit careless and sloppy. I think sometimes its speed becomes a factor in that. I think people, you know, it's important to recognize just how fast Florida plays. They play at the 24th fastest adjusted tempo in the country. That will cause, you know, kind of a frenetic, crazy, maybe to the naked eye, disorganized energy. And that can, of course, create turnovers. And when Florida lets that get out of control, it eliminates some of the good things that it does offensively. And when, like you said, when they become efficient and they do value the basketball, and whether that's headed up by Zion Pullen or Clayton, or you mentioned Kugel, who I think is actually a great example because of how poorly he started the year in that category and the way that he improved vastly over time, that is where Florida will make its money. If it can take care of the ball, we know that it has the capacity to be a strong assisting team. They do move the ball really well. They do set up each other's shots really well. Last night alone, 17 of 32 field goals were assisted. That's a great number, especially on the road. Great. Only 8 turnovers. This is a team that's really well built to play high tempo, you know, precise execution offensive basketball. Of course, there have been times where there have been lapses so far this season, but, and I think that this is important to recognize, Florida is 15-6 through 21 games. They are a good team. They rank among the best analytically, according to the KenPoms and the Torvics of the world. I believe on Torvik, after last night's game, I mean, they jumped up to, what was it, 27th in the country now?
Yeah, 27.
So you have a top 30 team, depending on where you look in the country. And I think that that is a byproduct of the efficiency that we're talking about. When they are at their best, they are one of the best offensive teams in the country. It's backed up statistically. And really, they are the only people who can get in their own way when it comes to maintaining that with consistency over the course of their games.
Yeah, that's a great point. And by the way, for people, for some perspective, you mentioned that great stat, 25-5, first guy since Eddie Shannon, who was first team All SEC in 1998, by the way, as you'd expect if you're going to throw out multiple 25-5 games. But Zion is now second. Bart Turbick has a kind of a war number, like if you think of baseball. And, you know, your win above replacement, only Mark Sears at Alabama is better right now. Even Dalton Connect, the you know, who will be an All-American at Tennessee, is just behind Pullen in that category. So that's how good Zion has been. And by the way, like, you know, Walter Clayton is in the top 25 in that list too. So it's not like it's a one-man band in terms of like just ridiculous efficiency. Yeah, I mean, Florida is playing efficient. And then what this team kind of is evolving into, and, you know, Todd kind of happily referenced it last night and again in the Georgia game, although I think the Georgia game was one where he really wished that they didn't collapse defensively for 10 minutes at the end. But this one, you know, of course, he was proud of the way that they defended in overtime. And then he was proud of Riley Kugel, which I thought was kind of a nice thing in terms of just seeing the fact that Antonio Reeves was lighting Florida up. And when you looked at late game lineups and some of these losses earlier in the year, Kugel was not on the floor. And it's important to point out to just our listeners, and it's something I know, you know, the Kugel's defense was why he was in the game last night late. It was his defense and his improving decision-making. And, you know, look, Antonio Reeves, they put him on him with 9 minutes ago, and Reeves goes 2 of 6 down the stretch. He had 2 turnovers. I mean, that's why Riley Cooper was in the game. I mean, and that impacted winning. It's kind of why Riley finishes, I think, plus six or plus five in the box, plus minus. And, you know, good for him. Good for him for finding ways to impact winning as he still figures it out offensively. And Florida has, you know, marvelous guards that are allowing Riley to figure it out offensively.
Absolutely. And I think it's important to note as well that Kugel has been, an integral part of Florida's defensive effort from the start of the season, even when things weren't going terribly well. And I think that, you know, Kugel maybe drew a little bit of ire from the fan base, or maybe not ire, but definitely a desire to see him, you know, kind of realize the potential I think everybody had, I think he had coming into the season. Even then, he had been a very efficient, very solid defender. And Florida had recognized that pretty early. I'll give you something that really stood out to me last night. Kugel was pretty quick to two fouls, and Florida decided to keep him in the game. And I think that the reason for that is because, again, he is a solid defender who really understands spatially where he needs to be on the floor and relative to his opponents and their locations. He's extremely athletic, which is something that you and I have talked about on several occasions. This is a guy whose athleticism, I think, ranks among the best in the SEC, and that's not really something you can quantify. But we do see it show up in games like last night. He's on the floor in clutch moments in order to be able to be a disturbance out there, and it doesn't necessarily matter that he's having a not-so-efficient shooting night, and he's disruptive. He's the kind of player who's going to be able to take away shots from opposing teams. He's good as a help defender, which I think is really important for this team. And you mentioned, you know, Florida has guys who are going to be able to make things happen offensively. And it's not just Zion Pullen or Walter Clayton. There are several other players who have been extremely efficient. I look at Will Richard, who's really been improving lately. I look at Micah Hanlogton, who now sneakily ranks 41st in the country in offensive rating individually.
Yeah.
Tyrese Samuel has been fantastic offensively, especially lately from two-point range, where he ranks 156th nationally in two-point field goal percentage. So Florida has guys who are going to be able to carry that load offensively. And it does open the door for guys like Kugel to be able to come onto the floor and maybe play a more defensively robust game in which he's allowed to make that his focus. And I think that that's of great benefit to Florida. I would say also, and not to change the subject here, but I would say too that it applies to Thomas Hauk a little bit. I think that Hauk is one of those guys who's going to be a high energy, you know, high octane defender in the same way that we see from Riley Kugel. And I don't know that he measures out similarly from a statistical standpoint defensively, but I think that there's something to be said for having that energy on the court and knowing that you can rely on other players offensively while bringing guys out who are going to be disruptive on the defensive end. And Kugel and to some degree Hauk both qualify for that. Kugel, though, really especially.
Yeah, and I love the Hauk shout because, you know, we had one play with – he's on the floor in the last 10 minutes at Rupp Arena, which tells you where this staff, you know, where their trust is, their trust level with Thomas. And then, you know, to make just a great help side play on Aaron Bradshaw that really frustrated – Bradshaw to the point where he was yelling at a ref, and you know, Florida comes down and makes a layup, and you know, gets the game back to, you know, I think it gave Florida tied the game at 75. So, you know, kind of a special little moment for Tommy Hauk to kind of get out there and show that, you know, he too has a role and can impact winning. And that's the biggest thing is like when you, and I think this is lost a little bit on some people, and it's not, I think it's understandable because you look at a collection of pieces like Florida and you say, there's a lot of talent on this team, and there is, but we've seen it with Arkansas. We've seen it with some of these portal heavy teams where it can take until February, March to assemble all these pieces and have them start finding out what their roles are and how each of them can impact, you know, the betterment of the team and winning. And that's what's happening with Hauk and guys. And I think Riley to some extent. And then, you know, then there's also just, you know, good players who have been good that are also figuring out what they're really good at. And I know people will get on Tyrese, and they should, for the 3-point jumpers last night, but he makes the beautiful mid-range jumper in overtime, which Golden isolates immediately in his press conference as being a huge moment. And then, you know, you talk about a redemption story, like 3 points, 4 turnovers, foul trouble, just eaten alive by Trey Mitchell in Gainesville. Last night, Trey Mitchell's the one that's frustrated all night. And it's Tyrese with 22-13 and 4 blocks. I mean, what a game.
Before I even talk about Samuel, I think it is somewhat funny to point out, and I joined the podcast stream here while you were in the middle of talking about it, but this game was, in the oddest way, a near reversal of what occurred in Gainesville. Right? And it was the exact opposite. Kentucky had a great first half, decent close, leads by 5. Florida has the second half and overtime in order to be able to get a win. The guys who performed well in Gainesville for Kentucky didn't perform well in Lexington, and the inverse for Florida, and it was just odd. It kind of, you know, almost too odd. It was weird. But on Samuel, yes, I think that, you know, this is a guy who has the ability, when he is on, to be truly game-changing. His ability to rebound is very good. I've always loved his aggressiveness. And you know, you point out the 3-pointers. I don't necessarily take as big an issue with those shot attempts as I think some people do. I would say this. I think Todd Golden and his staff are okay with those attempts. I don't know that they are looking for them necessarily, but if Tyrese Samuel is going to get an open look from 3, I know that they're comfortable with him taking that shot. Is it going to work out often? No. But when it does work out, you know, you're fine with stealing those 3 points. And I think Florida will lean back on its ability to generate a high volume of offensive possessions over the course of a game, just given its tempo. That, you know, empty possessions are, of course, a big deal for any team. But for Florida, they can be easily mitigated thanks to pace. And so a guy like Samuel does have the ability to play with a little bit more offensive freedom. And again, at times, will that be frustrating? I think so. And I think that it's fair to, you know, in review, look back on some of those shot attempts and say, really, was this the best decision? And the answer may be no. But at the same time, you know, I actually think that it speaks to Florida's overall offensive aggressiveness. And I would tab that as one of the things that allows them to be successful. They are, you know, a free-flowing, fast-paced offensive team. They're going to try and possess the ball 75 plus times a game and get up, you know, a ton of shots. And when you do that, you get these high scoring totals, even with guys like Tyrese Samuel or sometimes, you know, Alex Condon getting out beyond the arc and taking a 3-point attempt. And so, you know, last night we really saw Tyrese Samuel's value. He contributed in the categories that I know Florida needs him to. He was efficient for the most part from inside 2-point range, 9 of 19, solid. Importantly, 4 of 5 from the free throw line. That was an area that was a concern early, and Florida has quietly been excellent in that category over its last 6 games. 22 points, 13 rebounds, including 4 on the offensive end. And then here's the big one for me is 4 block shots. I mean, that is, you know, game altering type stuff in the post. And so a complete performance without question. And I would say that for all the attention that Walter Clayton and Zion Pullen are deservedly getting for their performances in this game, I think that, you know, Tyrese Samuel deserves his flowers just as much.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And I would add that Samuel's, you know, block shots and defensive performance underneath is, to some extent, even more impressive given that he's dealing with Ugonna Onyenso and Big Z, Zvon Mirovicic, who, you know, they don't have as much film. Like, that's a harder scout, right? It can be difficult to play against a guy who hasn't played much, because you don't necessarily get to watch their tendencies. You can't discuss those with assistants. So that's just like being in good fundamental defensive position. And then there were other things where he didn't get credit for blocks, where, you know, he was still disruptive. Thinking of, you know, speaking about Yensu, there was a Dillingham drive late in the game where, you know, Reese gets just a hand on a ball and disrupts the pass. Well, you know, that's just a deflection. It's not a block shot, but it's just tremendous defense, and Florida had, you know, the ability to get enough stops. And I like what you said about, you know, the shots. I don't think you really want Tyrese taking, you know, multiple threes when you have a chance to build a 1-point lead on the road. Sure. But I think you are right that some of that is that the staff will live with that. And to some extent, it's a recruiting tool. And it is not just a recruiting tool, but it's valuable in the locker room. I promise you, it is valuable in the locker room when this staff can say, look, you're going to have freedom offensively if you play for Florida. We are going to live with, you know, the decisions you make. We'll put you in a position to make these sorts of decisions. And, you know, we're not going to immediately sit you on the bench or you know, ream you out if you miss a shot like that. That stuff is really valuable. And I can tell you, after watching seven, however many years of Michael White in Florida, you know, there was a different culture offensively. And, you know, right now, at least you can look at numbers and say, well, which one is better? Which one is, you know, working better for Florida? So that's why, you know, yeah, I mean, that's not, I think Tyrese would tell you the second one may be a little greedy, but yeah, I mean, I think to some extent, it's just, this is what you want Florida to do. I mean, Walter Clayton gets blocked by Reed Sheppard in the corner. You know, that's not going to keep Walter Clayton from shooting corner threes. You know, I think Will Richard is a guy who they want to be more aggressive. They have said, you know, God, keep shooting, Will. And the way he shot himself out of the slump and the way he's been more efficient to some extent has been because he's been, you know, encouraged in that freedom, that sort of system that they have, which gives these players a lot of freedom to keep firing away. Look, we need you to make these shots to win. And you know, Richard has responded. Even if last night wasn't his best night, I would point out, offensively, at least as a shooter, you know, I would point out that he also was chasing Rob Dillingham for a lot of the game, chasing Reed Sheppard, and he still had six rebounds.
Well, the big thing for me is that Richard this season has found ways to make himself more valuable outside of the kind of catch and shoot Will Richard that I think we saw last year. And it's a sign of two things to me. One, that I really do think that Will Richard is a valuable, good player. But at the same time, I think that that's something that Florida staff can kind of hang its hat on. Here you have a guy who was, to a degree, kind of one-dimensional when he got to Florida, was really just a pure shooter. And now they've kind of turned him into a guy who's a little more full service. He can do everything. He's a very solid rebounder. We saw him actually make a couple key passes last night, which I think will get overlooked in the grand scheme of things because there were other guys who had more assists, but he had three. And that's a solid total for him considering what he's asked to do in Florida's offense. He's become far more active on the defensive side. You mentioned his difficult assignment last night, which I thought he handled reasonably well. And he's contributing, and I will shamelessly plug myself here. Your listeners can look forward to a story probably next week. I'm you know, looking forward to talking to Will Richard and kind of breaking down what this season's been like for him, because I think that he has maybe not been as you know, flashy in the areas where he was expected to. I point at things like three-point shooting, where he's still shooting 34.7%, you know, effective field goal percentage, 52.3%. These are things that were strengths for him last year that I don't think are as strong this season, that were maybe expected to be much stronger. But I would still say, you know, pretty confidently that this is a guy who has diversified what he's able to do for Florida basketball. And that has been the difference. And when he is at his best as a shooter, which we saw over the course of, you know, the three games prior to, you know, the Kentucky matchup, Will Richard has the ability to make the difference that way too. So, you know, I think the moral of the story here, Neil, is that Florida has a lot of guys who don't need to be at their best for the team to have a good night. And that points to a lot of progress from a personnel standpoint. Last year, you know, Florida lost Colin Castleton and everything really started to crumble. There were times where Riley Kugel did enough for them in order to be able to kind of bring them out of these slumps that they got into. And there were some exciting moments toward the end of the season with Kugel, you know, emerging as this featured wing for the Gators. But at the same time, you know, losing significant players from last year's team was far more impactful than it is this season. I think that we've seen that on several occasions, that Florida has multiple guys who are capable of contributing. I look at a guy like Denzel Aberdeen, who's gotten his minutes a little bit this season and been of value when he's been on the court. We talked about, you know, Tommy Houck earlier, who's kind of been in the same light. And that's important. So, on the Will Richard front, yes, such a valuable performance last night, even if the statistics like shooting percentage might not indicate that. But also I think that, you know, his struggles at times as a shooter and Florida's success, regardless, it points to team progress overall.
Yeah, no, I like that. And it's a good segue into just kind of two thoughts, which is, yeah, the diversity is what makes this team, you know, the fact that they don't need one particular guy to go off on any given night to be competitive and win is what creates a team that can win games in March. You know, and I point to the reality, Florida had 3 20-point scores last night at Rupp Arena. And I think that's the first time that's happened since the win over Gonzaga. I'm not positive about that.
That's correct.
Okay, so there you go. So they beat Gonzaga at the PK80. Now that Florida team got an atrocious seed from the NCAA selection committee and played a road game in the second round. Otherwise, they were a second weekend team. They led the country in quad one wins. So that Florida team could play with anyone. And part of it was that it could be Igor Kulichev, it could be Jalen Hudson, it could be Chris Chioza. And so there's a little bit of that feel with this Florida team, which was probably, you know, that Florida team that I'm referencing was probably the last really good Mike White team. And then this Florida team has that kind of balance. And then the other thing you mentioned, which I think is another huge distinction for me, and I'm not, this isn't, you know, bash Blanco day on Florida Basketball Hour. We had enough time to vent about that, Jacob. But development, like just the development, the developmental piece, and credit to Torian Green, who I know they hired and put him in charge of that. And it was considered kind of bold in basketball circles. So, I mean, between, you know, I will tell listeners that when he got the position, he had it at the Bulls and people thought, well, maybe he shouldn't have had that role at the Bulls. Maybe it was a role that Billy Donovan kind of carved out for him because he wanted to get into coaching and he loved his point guard. No, it appears that Torian is really good at this. You know, and I got a text from a Kentucky beat writer in the second half last night, and he said, man, Florida's younger players have gotten immensely better. Whether it's Denzel Abertine just staying on 2 feet while driving the lane to like make a huge shot to keep the game close, right? Or coming in and setting a hard screen because your guards have to screen too. Tommy Houck, we mentioned his defense. You know, Tyrese Samuel, and this is also development, like just making sure that he understands that when he faces people up, because he's a 6'9", built like a linebacker and quick, like that is going to be a mismatch even in the SEC, and getting him to lean into that aspect of his game, that's a development piece. So part of carving out a role is also understanding development and understanding, you know, what player can individually improve that will make them impactful when you collect all the parts together. So that's what goes. These are all things that go into a win like this, which obviously, you know, saw Florida play with what March Madness teams play with, poise. They met the eye test, of course. They have great guards. So work is not done, but they're starting to look like an NCAA tournament team. And that's a credit to the staff.
Yeah, well, actually, I think that that's a really important point. And I was hoping that we would get there, and I'm glad we did. There is a lot of work to be done. There are 10 games left in the season, and Florida is 15-6 overall and 5-3 in the SEC. Another important number, they're 1-6. Last night they were 0-6 in quad one games. And I think that there's room to grow that number still a little bit. That being said, look, I mean, if Florida goes 5-5 the rest of the way and just taking a, you know, cursory look at the schedule here, you got some tough games: Texas A&M, Auburn, two against Bama and one against South Carolina, and then the rest not so tough. You got LSU in Gainesville, Georgia in Athens. I suppose that's probably your toughest one, you know, outside of the ones I named just a second ago. Vanderbilt, Missouri, both at home, and then you have a road game at Vanderbilt to close out the season. Seems pretty favorable to go at least 5-5 over the course of these next 10 games. And if you do that, you're a 20-win team with a win over Kentucky and Rupp. You're perfect quad 2-4. That's probably a tournament team. Now, there are ways to make that a more sure bet, and you go and win a couple of these games. I think that Texas A&M presents an opportunity on the road to maybe go back-to-back with some real quality wins here. But, you know, generally speaking, this is not done. Florida has not locked itself into a tournament berth. It did itself a huge favor last night. There's no doubt about that. But I think one thing that, you know, fans need to not do is, just as much as I think that, and I've said this on your show before, you know, fans can't get caught up in the losses, but at the same time, they also can't get caught up in the wins. Last night was a big moment for sure, but it is not the end all be all. The same way it wasn't the end all be all when Florida got blown out on the road at Ole Miss. I mean, I would, you know, all of us who were talking about the team basically were saying at the time, calm down, let's see what happens. There's a long way to go. And the same applies here. Great win, huge moment for the team. Still, though, double-digit games to play in the regular season. A lot can happen, but momentum now trending in the right way. And that is very important. That wasn't to diminish the importance of last night's win, but I do think it's important to just be, you know, whole thinking, and we look at the big picture here. And as you said, you know, job is unfinished.
Yeah, no, very much so. And, you know, Saturday against a team that has kind of maybe the weirdest resume in the SEC, Texas A&M, in College Station. I mean, this is a team that, first of all, Buzz Williams' team has really challenged itself. I mean, they have played a very difficult schedule, or did in the non-conference. Their in-conference schedule has been, I don't know, probably kind of run-of-the-mill. I mean, they had two games against LSU, which they split. They played Missouri and Arkansas, who were bad, and split those games. And then lost Auburn, but beat Kentucky at home in overtime. But look, you look at their non-conference. They played Houston. They played FAU. They played Iowa State. They played Virginia. They played Ohio State, which is a bubble team. I mean, that's they've challenged themselves. They also have maybe the best guard in the SEC in Wade Taylor IV. What they don't have, I think, is the type of lethal wings that have given Florida a ton of problems. So it's a game where, you know, Florida matches up pretty well with A&M, and Florida has shown it can win games even when the opposing team's best player goes crazy. That doesn't mean Florida wants to let Wade Taylor go for 40 on Saturday. But, you know, I love this quote by Dean Smith, Jacob, and I'll finish up our chat with this and hear your thoughts. But Dean Smith said the hardest thing about coaching is winning one game and thinking you have won another one. And I love that. And I think that's the challenge before Florida, right, is, okay, we got one. We can make this a two-quad win week, and then we get a week off.
Well, one thing I would say in my interactions with him over the course of the last 2 years, Todd Golden has impressed me, if in no other way, than his ability to kind of keep his team grounded and in the moment. I've always gotten the sense that Florida is in a good headspace just in terms of we focus on what's directly in front of us. And that last night was Kentucky, and that worked out great for Florida. But I think that the sentiment that will exist, if it doesn't already, within the program is essentially that is officially in the rear view. You know, it's not, that's it. It's over. That game is past Florida. The momentum, I'm certain that they will try to hold on to. But it is a great quote that you just brought. And I think that it speaks really true to how Todd Golden chooses to kind of conduct the band here. Florida does a really good job of changing its focus over quickly, of staying grounded. You know, there's a saying I like of keeping 10 toes in today. And I think Florida does a really good job of doing that. And I will also add, you know, they do have a very fascinating matchup on their hands coming up that will require 100% of their attention. So they can't really get caught up. I mean, they're about to face a team that is the best, literally the best in the country at offensive rebounding. And Florida will have to contend with that. There's a physicality on the road that will exist in this matchup that you can't get caught up in mentally beforehand. They will require perfect preparation. And, you know, providing they're able to counter that well, I think that there are opportunities to steal another win. You look at Texas A&M's numbers, which, you know, you had just mentioned, one thing that really stands out to me, it's a very poor three-point shooting hole, 26.7% on the season from beyond the arc. That plays directly into Florida's strengths. Florida likes to play in transition. Florida likes to play off of missed baskets. Florida is not necessarily the most effective three-point guarding team. And here you have this gift, essentially, where Texas A&M hasn't made those shots this year. And frankly, they haven't really made a lot of their two-point field goals either. So a big opportunity on hand for the Gators, and I think that they appreciate it as such. It is the biggest game, is the next game, regardless of who you're playing. Todd Golden talks all the time about how every league win in this conference is earned. None of them are easy. And that in and of itself requires 100% of the team's focus and the staff's focus. And I think that we're seeing, as evidenced by their wins and their record so far this season and the improvement that you and I have spent the last 40 minutes talking about, I think it's a byproduct of that. I think that the mindset has been really good, and it starts there, and it starts with Todd Golden. And I would be remiss to say that I'm nothing short of impressed with what I've seen so far, and I look forward to seeing what this team's going to be able to do moving forward.
Yeah, no, should be fun. Jacob Rudner, as always, amazing to have you on the podcast. Y'all know where to find Jacob's stuff, but if you don't, Jacob Rudner's at 24/7 Sports. Make sure that you follow Jacob. I know that he also has, you know, football stuff going on. He's got baseball stuff. You know, I hear tell of a pretty solid baseball program in Gainesville. So you can
check not all bad. That.
At Jacob Rudner on Twitter. Thanks, man. I appreciate you being here.
Thanks, Neil. I appreciate the time as always.
Yep. Take care.
You too.
So, you know, it's always good to talk to Jacob because he's just a really well plugged in and connected dude around the program. And look, he's right. Like, Texas A&M is a fascinating team right now. I mean, they're 12-8, and yet they're in the field. From a bracketology standpoint, like if you go to Bracket Matrix and you look up Texas A&M, you'll see, hold on. I was trying to do that. And I think I didn't mean to log out of it. I'm sorry about that, people. Just give me a quick moment. I mean, they're in, they're a team that's in, they're one of the last four byes. In fact, from a consensus standpoint, on Bracket Matrix. So that is, you know, the challenge that lies ahead of Florida is, hey, can you beat NCAA tournament teams back to back? And, you know, so they'll have a chance to do that. They'll have a chance to be the team that has Wade Taylor IV, I think, one of the best guards in the country, not just in the SEC. And, you know, what does Buzz get outside of Wade the Fourth, four, as Buzz is fond of calling him? They need something other than Wade Taylor the Fourth, I think, if they're to beat the Gators. Wade is coming off his 30-point performance against Ole Miss. He had 31 against Kentucky. He went for 41 against Arkansas. Like, he's going to have a great night because he's a great basketball player. What else does this A&M team get? Now, I mentioned they don't have lethal wings. It doesn't mean that they have a dearth of them. They actually have wings. They have Anderson Garcia. They have Solomon Washington. Florida has been snake bit by Tyrese Radford before. So, you know, certainly they know that they have to be aware of Tyrese, although he can be kind of an inconsistent player, kind of a wild card type player. What do they get out of, you know, other people? Jacob mentioned they don't shoot the ball well. They don't have rim protectors, which makes their offensive rebounding being kind of funny. Like, they lack a defensive rim protector, which is really the biggest weakness in this Buzz defense and maybe the difference between this team and, say, like, Buzz's last two teams, which went 27-13 and 25-10. Like, which, you know, this one doesn't have anybody that's necessarily going to block too many shots. But Henry Coleman has given Florida trouble before. Of course, you know, whether or not Henry Coleman can handle a guy who physically matches up well with him and Tyrese Samuel is a different question. But for a guy like Micah Handlockton, who's gotten pushed around some underneath, you know, Henry Coleman can be, you know, a challenging guard, right? Jace Carter, transfer from Illinois Chicago, hasn't given them what they thought he would give them. He's shooting 20% from deep on probably too much volume, and his minutes have decreased as a result. Anderson Garcia, another guy who can really crush you on the offensive glass. He can get fouled, he can get to the line, but at 6'7", he's going to be undersized against Florida's bigs. You know, so that's a matchup that probably – favors the Gators. Really, for me, the game is kind of about backcourts. And normally you would say that's great for Florida. But again, this is kind of the A&M team that can deal with that. Look, when Tyrese Radford is sort of their Will Richard X factor too, like when he's good, they're excellent. He had 28, they beat Kentucky. He had 21, they beat Ohio State. He had 21, they beat SMU. He goes for 2 points against John L. Davis and Florida Atlantic, L. You know, and then, 13 points the other night at Ole Miss, but over 4 from deep, L. Over 5 from deep against Arkansas, L. So Tyrese Radford is definitely a bit of an X factor. Can Florida slow him down? He's had success against the Gators in the past. So I think that's a big, big question as Florida readies for this opportunity against the Aggies. A win would move the Gators to 6-3 in the league and really put them in a position to maybe compete for an SEC championship. To be honest, you know, with two games against Alabama remaining on the slate and, just sort of the Auburn and Georgia trips being the tough ones. Other than that, and then the South Carolina game, you know, there's no nights off in this league, but Florida has games that they should win against LSU that they should win two against Vanderbilt. They should beat Missouri again. So, like, if you win those four, that's 9. And then you have 6 games where you can kind of compete for the SEC championship if you win Saturday. So that's the challenge ahead of these Gators. Obviously, a second quad one win, too, would go a long way to kind of solidifying Florida's bracketology position and getting them in a situation where they are definitely considered on the right side of the bubble as opposed to the wrong side. Really, really fabulous opportunity. Again, the last 4 games with Texas A&M decided by 8 points all came down to the final possession. The last 3 games decided by 5 points all came down to the last possession. So can Florida flip that script and grind one out against the Aggies? We will see on Saturday at 4:00 on a great Saturday of college basketball. If you are one of those people who kind of waits till the end of football season, including the NFL, to really get into college hoops, boy, is this an awesome weekend for you. To just dive in. If you're a junkie, which a lot of you who listen to our pod are, you know, this is kind of a reward for sticking with it from Feast Week and beyond. So thank you for listening. Go Gators. Keep attacking closeouts.